Scott.
This is Pat.
Hey, we got a great program here today. Of course, we've got some of our normals taking calls and talking about some of the current things that are happening in the world of finance.
We have a great, great phone calls. We've got two great phone calls where people are being pitched products, and one of them just absolutely amazed me.
Yeah, I think it will be very enlightening when you hear this story.
Enlightening and frightening.
Yeah, stick around.
Answering your top financial questions with a little humor and a lot of fun. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're here today. Thanks for being part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Both myself and my co-host sitting at my side here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. So we're glad you are here with us. If you're listening to us on the radio as we're being broadcast, or if you're listening to a podcast as you're doing whatever you're doing, we're glad you are taking time and being part of the Hanson McLean family and show.
And we're relatively new to some of you in the Denver area and in San Francisco, but we've been doing this show for over 20 years in Northern California.
Yeah. And some of our new podcast listeners, which our podcast
it's available all over the world.
Yes. The entire world.
The world. Actually, and beyond, if you have the right technology.
Yes. And well, and if you know how to use that technology.
Yes. That is correct.
Because I listen to quite a few podcasts anymore.
I do.
I find that I go in segments. Anyway, but you can go to iTunes and search Hanson McLean. You'll find us. And by the way, if you're a podcast listener, we appreciate any good ratings you get us.
Yes.
You give us.
Although we're not allowed to ask for them or encourage
good ratings.
I think
technically, here's what's interesting. There's a lot of interesting things. Hopefully you listen to this program because we have interesting things to talk about.
Well, that's the hope.
One of the things that I have actually has concerned me as an investor, as an investment advisor over the last number of years, is the shrinking number of publicly traded companies in the United States.
Now, most people think, what are you talking about? What do you mean they're shrinking? Are the size of the company shrinking?
No.
Or the number available?
The number of available and the number of companies that just remain private.
Yes, that never come public.
There was a year and a half ago, so there was over 100 companies, private companies, that had valuations north of $1 billion.
They called them unicorns. They used to call them unicorns.
Not anymore.
Now they call them
everyday horses.
Yes, whatever a unicorn is that isn't.
Yeah, that's commonplace.
Yes.
Anyway, and we're seeing more and more companies delaying going public or not going public at all. Or we see public companies going private, like Dell Computer.
Or companies merging.
Private. So, and to kind of put things into perspective, in the 1990s, there were over 9,000 publicly traded U.S. companies.
Okay.
Today, there are under 6,000 publicly traded companies.
So it has shrunk by?
About 40%, actually.
Okay. And part of it is?
We have about 60% of what we used to have.
Companies going private. And that's
emerging.
But that's driven companies going private may have been a result of the low cost of money, where private equity gets together and says, hey, we can really make some money on this company. We can borrow at 4% and invest in this company.
Yes.
And make 7 or 8 or 9 or 10. And so they look for private equity, looks for companies that are ripe for turnarounds. And the lower the cost of money.
Well, sometimes turnarounds, sometimes recapitalize. That's all they do.
Yeah, sometimes they just actually just clean up the books a little bit and
load
take
them
some cash out and move on their merry way.
But you're also seeing private equity sell to other private equity more frequently.
Yeah.
So we have less. So the fact that what we've got now is we have more dollars because we have just more dollars invested chasing fewer companies.
Which would lead to an increase in stock prices.
That by in and of itself would, right?
Yes. Just on if you understood a supply and demand curve.
And today when you're saying, what is private equity? What is that term? How's private equity? I mean, equity is just another term for stock ownership. Equity is ownership, right? How much equity you have in your house, et cetera.
Ownership.
It's ownership. So an equity is a is a form of stock. So there's the publicly traded, which is we all can buy, and it's just on an exchange. We know what the price is because we can just see what was the last.
Because people are buying and selling, there's a marketplace for it.
What private equity is, these are companies that are not traded on exchanges, and you may not have access to buy them at all. So there's like, hey, it's private, just like your home's private.
Yeah, people can't
come
and buy it.
But I can't just buy a piece of your house. You're going to say, take a hike. Private equity is the same way. And there's private equity funds that pool investors' resources together and then go out and buy these companies.
Either through high net worth or more often pension plans.
But the challenge with the structure of these, Pat, is that they're limited partnership structures and they're many years. They're not liquid. You're tying your money up.
You don't really know what it's worth until you go to sell it.
Most private equity funds are designed to last about 5 to 7 years, but they might go on for 10, 12 years. And even when they're done, there might be stocks.
Could be laggards in there for 15, 20 years.
It's like
years.
They never really go away, and you end up having K-1s for the rest of your life on them. So they're very complicated. And it'll be interesting. One of the things that I'm hoping to see in the next few years is some more democratization of private equity.
One of the reasons some of the companies have actually stayed private or have gone private is this: the cost of regulation in terms of complying with the Dodd-Frank bill that took place after the Great Recession.
You know how many people say, why would I want to go public today?
Yeah, I know some people that own companies that were large enough to go public, and they say they couldn't even imagine the regulatory environment of the Dodd-Frank.
You get millions of dollars of compliance costs, just all the stuff to add.
And remember, there's only 500 companies in the S&P 500, Standard & Poor's 500. We're talking about 6,000 publicly traded companies, which would lead you to believe that there's a lot of small publicly traded companies.
Well, there are a lot of small publicly traded companies.
Right? But don't have values of more than maybe 50 million, 100 million, 200 million.
Or less.
Or less.
Yeah, a lot of those. There's less, though, because some of those companies are saying, why do I need this anymore?
That's where the companies are going private.
But it'll be interesting to see. But as we continue to see private equity grow, which it has, at some point in time, there'll be other structures.
Yeah, though private equity will actually go public. So you could buy a publicly traded private equity.
Well, they already have some firms like that, KKR and some of those.
You'll see more of it, though.
But you don't get... It's not the same kind of deal, though. Now you're anyway.
It's not quite the same, but it will. We certainly know that the realm of investing over the next few years will change.
Yeah, it will change. It will continue to evolve.
Yes, yes. It will continue. Hopefully, for the better.
Yeah. So hey, we're gonna take some calls here. If you want to join us, and actually before I want to talk a little bit something, but if you want to join us when we start taking calls here. 1-888-2-HANSEN is our number. So if it's anything has to do with anything financial, maybe it's your retirement, trying to figure if you're on the right track for retirement. Maybe it's an investment portfolio questions, like do you have the right kind of mix? Perhaps someone's recommending you to invest in some sort of product, or you've got wondering if your estate plan's set up properly, or tax question, whatever the case. Our contact number is 1-888-2-HANSEN, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. Now, before we hit the calls here, if you purchased a universal life insurance policy in the 1980s or 1990s, and you still have it in existence today, there's a good chance your premium is going up.
Or you're going to receive a notice that says that your policy will either collapse or run out of money in the near future.
So what happened, whole life insurance, which used to be pretty popular years ago, 50 years ago and more, whole life insurance was a combination of insurance and a savings vehicle that insurance companies sold, and you'd pay a premium. It was designed to last your whole life. And if you didn't die when you were younger, as you got older, you end up having some cash value in that, and you could take a loan from it. It was a very common for the average American. Before the proliferation of mutual funds and whatnot, it was a very common way that people invested. And then when the interest rates started going higher throughout the 70s, people were saying, why should I have this life insurance policy? I'm not getting much interest rate. Look what the interest rates are. I can go invest in a money market that came out in the early 80s, right? I can get in these money markets. So what happened in the 80s, the insurance industry designed a new type of product called universal life. And universal life was a kind of a hybrid between whole life insurance and term insurance with a savings kicker with it.
But the difference between universal life and whole life, it put more of the risk on the purchaser than it did on the company.
But that's not how the life insurance companies pitched it.
No, but that's what that was.
Yeah. So with the way these were designed, they used an assumed interest rate. They'd say, well, what are current interest rates? Back then, there was maybe 8%, 9%. So they'd say, let's assume we earn 8% on the money the rest of your life. And we know that as you get older, your actual cost of insurance is going to go up because you're getting closer to death. So we'll have it so you save some money in the early days, and you're going to have this kind of cushion of dollars set aside that's going to start building up in there. So as you get older, your premiums are going to be paid for in part by the monthly amount that you contribute, but also because of the interest that you're going to earn, this high interest rate on this great savings is going to pay for your cost of insurance.
Before we go on, I think that for the new listeners, we're not a huge fan of universal life or whole life.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So if you're thinking, here comes the big sales pitch.
No, not
we are not big fans. If you listen to the show at all,
every once in a while,
very rarely. So if you get this notification from your insurance company, don't go to your agent to ask them what to do.
So here's what's happened. Don't go to ask your agent. They're going to sell you a new policy.
Yeah, that's what they're going
to
do.
You need to learn this. Actually, I wrote an article about this for Next Avenue, nextavenue.com.
And you can go to our website and you'll find it.
Yeah. Go to moneymatters.com. There'll be a link to it. But what's interesting about this universal life, we've had two things happen. As interest rates have declined substantially, these people that have had the policies for years, there's not enough money set up in savings now to with the interest to cover the cost of insurance.
To fund them.
Second, to make things worse, for those that are healthy, they saw this thing coming and said, wait a minute, I don't need this anymore. I'm going to go get something else because this policy is not working for me. So they go get new insurance. So who's left? Those that can't get insurance anymore.
Which means adverse selection.
That's what they call the insurance industry. So what's happened is the insurance companies have jacked up the internal cost of insurance on the policies at the same time. So one, you've got low interest rates aren't making your premium payments. Two, you've got higher premium payments just because the cost of insurance has gone up.
Yes.
So this is really common. We're seeing people getting notices where their premiums are being doubled, sometimes more than doubled.
And there's lots of things you can do. One is you can lower the face value of your insurance policy and not put any more money in it. That's one of the things. One thing is you can just surrender it. One is that you can actually continue it. And it's all dependent upon what your needs are and whether you need the insurance, number one, or whether you can get insurance.
Yeah. And if the policy, if you can't get insurance, the policy might actually have value in and of itself. Even if you don't want it, you might sell it.
Yeah, you could sell these insurance policies in the secondary market.
But anyway, that's something to
go to our website, moneymatters.com, and you can link to the article.
Yeah. So anyway, let's hit the phones. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number. We're starting in Sacramento with Jerry. Jerry, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. I attended a seminar a couple weeks ago, and they were recommending a couple of plans, and one of them was called an asset strategy plan, and basically what it was for long-term care. It said that if we rolled our IRA into this plan, we could roll it over, which would not cause a tax event, and then that would be there. If we needed long-term care, we could use the money tax-free. And then if we didn't use the money on our death, our family could get a death benefit, a tax-free death benefit from that plan. And I wanted to know what you thought of that. Is that legitimate?
It sounds like life insurance. With the exception of rolling it from your IRA into this, it's without taxes. It sounds like life insurance.
But how do you get it without taxes?
I don't know how you would buy the life insurance site inside your IRA without taxes. I have no idea how you would do that.
Me either. That's why I wanted to find out.
Some old Keel plans, you could have up to 25% invested in an insurance product, a life insurance product. But I don't think the death benefit would be tax-free.
That's correct. The death benefit would not be tax-free.
So you went to a seminar where they're insurance salespeople.
Well, yeah, it was basically a for living trust seminar, but it was turned out to be with a retirement financial.
Do you have
company.
A business card in front of you?
No, I don't.
It has somewhere. There's an insurance.
It would say insurance on there.
It's a retirement group is what it was.
Whatever that means.
I don't know. Does it? Are they licensed? Does it? Does it say yes?
Yeah, there's Pat. There's
FINRA or SIPC on their business card.
I don't have the card.
Yeah, you know what? So without, did they tell you
with the asset protection plan?
Yeah,
strategy plan.
It sounds like insurance.
It's insurance.
It sounds like insurance. I don't know how you would actually purchase this insurance with your IRA money without paying taxes on the IRA money coming out and then buying the life insurance policy.
That was the that was the selling point that I thought was pretty neat. If I can just roll my IRA into that instead of, because I've been moving it into a Roth, but just roll it into that, and then if I don't need it, then it goes to my family.
Yeah, listen, it sounds great, doesn't it?
It does. Too good.
It really does. I wish I had one of those.
So I thought I'll call you.
Well, you know, there is a chance that it was presented in such a manner to lead you to believe one thing and have enough confusion so you think you leave thinking, what did they say? What? Maybe I better set an appointment after all.
So I've only been doing this for almost 25 years. I've never heard of such a product.
Okay.
Heard products pitched as it'll cover your long-term care insurance without any taxes and be tax-free to your heirs. That's just a life insurance.
That's a life insurance policy.
That's a universal life or a whole life.
But you buy that after tax.
That is correct.
That's with the after tax.
That is correct.
And they tend to have a lot of other downsides with them as well.
Yeah, we're not recommending that, but that is how they are pitched.
I know you guys aren't big on annuities, so
no, we are not huge fans of annuities.
No,
I have
a follow-up question on this. Was the seminar, did they provide a good steak? Was it good food anyway?
It was.
Okay, well, good. Yeah, thanks. So there we go. So it wasn't a total loss.
It was.
What's your question for us?
The follow-up question is an index guaranteed strategy, and I believe that's also the way I was explained is your money can go up in the market, but it won't go down. What do you think about those?
So they're index annuities, and
they have high YTB.
Index guaranteed strategy, I think.
They have a very high YTB, yield to broker.
Yeah.
So those products pay anywhere from 6% to 12% commission upfront to the person who sold them to you.
And
the insurance company needs to recoup all of those sales commissions plus their internal costs before they can even afford to give Jerry back his principal.
So, Jerry, so what happens with those is what they fail to mention is that there are participation rates in there with caps on them, and they don't participate in the dividends of the underlying index, such as
they
the
don't S&P participate 5. In all the upside. They don't. There's all kinds of limitations.
So they might have a participation rate of, let's say, 50% or 60% to a cap of 6% or 7% or 8%, which means that if the market goes up by 15%, you're only going to get to the cap or to the participation rate.
And your money's tied up for a decade or more.
And they have all kinds of restrictions on liquidity.
And even if they say you can take a 10% free withdrawal, I've seen them where if you take a 10% free withdrawal, it actually hurts your participation rate. Plus, the insurance companies can change the contracts in them.
So what the insurance company does is they invest some money and they buy options on the S&P 500.
Which you can do the same for that.
Which you can do the same
without
actually.
Because I'm going to invest 90.
It's not quite the same because he doesn't get the free steak dinner. That he got from
and new friends,
but it's garbage, just flat out garbage.
Okay. Yeah, we're not big fans.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
By the way, Jerry, most financial advisors, you talk to registered investment advisors, certified financial planners who have a lot of experience. Most will agree with us.
Actually, but I'm going to say something about the workshops. We do workshops.
We don't pitch any product at all.
You come to our workshop, you will not get a steak dinner.
And you won't get a steak dinner.
There are cookies and I believe...
There's not much to eat.
Coffee. Maybe.
But we're not...
And sodas.
We're not...
But we're not pitching products. We're trying to educate.
Yeah, and it's about plans and stuff. So.
Okay, well, I listen every week. So
good. Right. Well, glad you do, Jerry.
You're the people that I thought I would give a call and see what you thought about these. So,
well, thanks.
I appreciate that.
We appreciate it. Part of the reason we do this program every week is to help answer questions like that as well. Because the nice thing about calling a program like this, we're not trying to sell you anything. Oh, we want our ratings to go up, obviously.
Yeah, but naturally.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go to San Francisco. We're going to talk with Douglas. Douglas, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, how you doing?
Wonderful.
I'm making a career change, and I'm taking my retirement. I'm becoming a securities investment advisor, and I'm taking my retirement from my old job, and the company I'm going to be working for, they really push the indexed annuities, and I want to make sure this is something I feel comfortable with that is a good investment. So that's what my question is. Is the index annuities a good way to go to take your retirement?
Just a follow-up to over time.
Okay, so Douglas, two things. One, you need to do more research on the company you're going to go to work for. So I want you to go to our website, moneymatters.com, and I want you to watch two videos. One is Liars, Levies, and Lawsuits, the three things your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. So it's called Liars, Levies, and Lawsuits. You're going to find it on moneymatters.com. And then I want you to watch another video, which is called...
Why everyone wants to sell you an annuity and we don't.
And why we don't want you to buy an annuity. So I suspect that you're not actually... Are you studying to get a securities license for this job?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Which license first?
Is it 6, 7, 65?
I have no idea.
My guess is you're probably going to get licensed for insurance. It's probably San Francisco. It's probably a California life insurance license, because equity index annuities, although they sound like securities products, they actually are not technically securities products, which means they're not regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission and other bodies that regulate securities.
So
they're regulated by the insurance commissioner.
So, Douglas, you asked us two questions. You called about the investment, but ultimately, if you're going to work for the company that is selling the investment, it's about what you'll be doing for a living. So that's why I want you to watch both those webinars at moneymatters.com. How old of a man are you?
I'm 45.
Okay. Have you ever done anything in the securities field before?
No, I've been in the medical field.
Okay. You've got to do quite a bit of research
not on this company.
If you were my brother...
not only that, to be a good financial advisor, if that's what you're looking at getting, it's not just a couple weeks worth of education.
Yeah.
I mean, correct.
Yeah.
So it's a many year process. My question would be, the firm you're going to go work with, are they prepared to? So if you're not, it's not like you're taking a sabbatical and going back to school.
Yeah.
Actually, your certified financial planner designation. It sounds like you're going to work for.
We have a program with the local colleges where we actually bring in college students that are studying in finance. And we actually put them through a multi-year program before they actually get to meet with clients.
Well, not only that, we've got one of our certified financial planners teaches at, I think, the UC Davis
Extension
Forum.
So you need to do some research. The answer to your question is, would we recommend an indexed annuity?
Never.
No.
Never have.
No. Just flat out no.
What should I do with... I have to do something with this retirement by March.
Got it. Why by March?
Because you have 1 year to do something.
To do what?
With it. You have 1 year to roll it over into something. Otherwise, you can't touch it until you're, 68.
According to who? I don't know what you're...
According to the company.
Is it a defined benefit pension plan? Can you take this in a monthly pension or a lump sum?
Yes.
Okay, so that's a completely different question.
Leaving your employer, and
so he's got to decide whether he's going to take a deferred vested pension or a lump sum. So they're saying to you, Doug, they're saying either you could take $600 a month when you're age 62 or X amount of money now. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
All right. How much money is it when you're 62? Or
right now it's about $100,000. I think it comes out to be $800,000, $900,000.
Okay.
If I wait till I'm 68.
Okay, so that's so you're putting the cart before the horse. The first question you need to ask, does it make sense to defer that pension?
We're running out of time here, but I would say don't take the money now. Take the pension later.
Take the pension later. Don't roll it over. You're going to take a deferred vested pension.
Because there's already an assumed interest rate growth in that pension, and you'd have to earn better than that. And I'm not that confident that would actually happen.
Yes.
I mean, if you look at how studies about the average investor does, they do much worse than the indexes, by and large. That's just that
so
reality.
You want to take the deferred vested pension. So that's what they call it.
Yep. Wait until your retirement age.
Wait until your retirement age, and they'll send you a monthly check.
Well, that was an interesting call. Hey, we need to take a break. When we come back, we will take some more calls. So if you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. This is Hanson McClain.
To be part of Hanson McClain's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-242-6766.
Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McClain.
Hey, you know, we thought before we continued on, to talk to you a bit about how do you know the qualifications of someone who's a financial advisor?
The call we had just before the break, quite
nice
frankly,
gentleman.
Nice gentleman. Sure, he's a hard worker. Quite frankly, it was just a little bit scary.
So here's the thing. When you go to a medical doctor, you know. At least they went to medical school and they passed
some tests. They're on a right.
Right.
They're licensed.
You see
somewhere.
The thing hanging on the wall. You know. There's someone's. I mean, I don't. Do you know which organization regulates medical doctors?
I don't.
No, I don't either. American Medical Association. I don't know. I actually do not know. But one would. I assume my doctor. Now it's
yes.
Pretty funny. I start thinking about this. I mean, I've did some research. My primary care doctor. I did quite a bit of research actually before we.
To do some research on the person before you hire him.
Yeah, right? And I know her background and that sort of stuff. And
pretty easy to get to.
Referred to me, actually.
Pretty easy to get to.
Yeah.
Pretty easy.
Poking around, did a little research online, found out more about my doctor, my medical doctor.
So in the two calls that we had on the first part of this show, both people that called in said that they talked to a financial advisor.
So what the heck is a financial advisor?
What qualifies someone to call themselves a financial advisor?
Nothing.
Zero.
Nothing.
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 Zero.
Seriously nothing.
Right?
For whatever reason, I don't. When stockbrokers started change their name to financial advisor, I actually wondered why the Securities and Exchange Commission allowed it, because they have what's called a registered investment advisor, but they didn't seem to care. So,
but
one day, just financial advisors. I mean, stockbrokers all became financial advisors.
But you, if your advisor is a certified financial planner,
or a chartered financial consultant, those are the two major.
And if they're chartered financial consultants, as I am, you can expect that they're probably over the age of 55.
Fair enough.
Right.
I don't know anyone who's getting their certified.
No one is getting their chartered
CHFC.
Yeah, no one. No one. In fact, you had your chartered financial consultant.
I'm a chartered financial consultant.
And went and got your CFP because you're a little bit more motivated than I am. I didn't go for that after designation.
Hey, you know why I got my CFP? This is back in the 90s. I was a chartered financial consultant. I was talking to a reporter from the Wall Street Journal. I'd been helping her on a story on pension stuff, and she'd written my name a couple times, some stories. And she said, this is back in the day when the Certified Financial Planner Board had a separate conference from the International Association of Financial Planners. And she says, I'm on this panel at the CFP's having our conference. She says, you need to be on that panel with me. You'd be perfect on that panel with me. She says, you're going to that conference, aren't you? And I said, no. She says, why not? I said, well, I'm not a certified financial planner. This is back in the mid-90s.
You were a chartered financial consultant. And that.
But when I said I'm not a certified financial planner, there was this response of, oh, that was honestly the last time I had a conversation with that reporter.
She qualified you?
She qualified me.
She qualified. And if the charter financial consultant.
I probably should have said I'm a charter financial consultant, but I didn't get that
anyway. Charter financial consultants had a
better lobbying group.
If we had a lobbying group and if we had a conference, we could probably fill up this studio.
In any case.
With all 12 of us.
today, I'm a certified, I went right after that, doggone, I'm getting this thing. And I was able to challenge and take a two-day exam back then. It was, anyway, now it's six courses. It's a lot of work. But if you have a degree in finance and already have some other degrees, sometimes you can just take a two-day course.
We tried to get all advisors.
And you have to agree to a series of ethics that you're going to abide by, certain practice standards that you're going to abide by.
So it is a qualifier.
It's a qualifier.
A qualifier. It's not the qualifier.
That is correct.
But it is a qualifier.
Because there's some CFPs that I wouldn't.
That is correct. But it is a qualifier. What the biggest qualifier is, number one, do they have any licenses? Are they a registered investment advisor? Because in this show, if you didn't listen to the first half, go to our podcast, look up Hanson McClain, download it, listen to the first half of the show. These both people, I would bet, were being pitched products by someone that didn't have a securities license, nor were they registered investment advisors.
That's right. Because someone could just be a licensed insurance agent.
And call themselves a financial advisor.
And recommend equity index annuities.
So what do you want to ask them? What do you want to ask the person that you're working with to see if they actually...
What qualifications do you have? Why are you qualified to be a financial advisor? Are you a certified financial planner? Do you have another designation?
Go to brokercheck.com and look up their back, brokercheck.org.
Just Google brokercheck.
And look up their regulatory history.
If they're securities licensed, you'll find out. If they're not, you'll see they're not listed. That will tell you right there that they're really, if they're not, never been licensed. And
if they're pitching things that sound too good to be true, like this is the greatest, this is a loophole in the tax code that allows you to do this. Stay away from them. If they're hard selling you, if they're telling you have to do this today or you won't be able to do it ever, stay away from them. Just leave. If they won't tell you how they're being compensated, if they don't tell you, ask them, how are you getting paid on this? If they won't tell you, it's a red flag. It's a red flag. You do not want to pay someone a big commission that you don't know about, where they have no vested interest in the outcome.
Zero.
You wouldn't pay a contractor the minute they showed up at your house who told you they were going to remodel your kitchen. You wouldn't write them a check.
And if you've had a contractor, you know that oftentimes you hold some out till the end, because otherwise you're never going to see them coming out and finishing that last little bit.
So you want to pay your advisor a little bit every year based on the size of the account. You do not want to pay the advisor up front. So you need to understand how the person that is holding themselves out as a financial advisor is getting paid.
And the whole idea about a big commission for an exchange of a product.
It's
good for an insurance company.
The last thing you really want to stay away from, and I've seen it three times in the last 2 years.
Personally, you're talking about.
Yes. And it breaks my heart, is in the case of divorce or death of a spouse, sudden termination of employment, where the advisor is preying on that particular situation in order to get you to make a financial decision. There is no hurry. There's no hurry to roll over IRAs. There is none. None. So.
Yeah. And by the way, at our website, moneymatters.com, we have a webinar on Lies, levies, lawsuits.
The three things your advisor doesn't want you to know.
Is that what it is?
Something like that. Is that what it's called?
It's close enough.
It's been a while since I've done the webinar, and I haven't been to the website.
But anyway, it goes over in a little more detail about what we were just talking about. Because I got to tell you, every week someone comes into a Hanson McClain office
and
meets with one of our advisors that's been sold some garbage product, and had they listened to that webinar or done a little bit of background check for themselves, they would have avoided that.
Yes.
It happens all the time. And just because the person was recommended by your good friend and they think they're a good person, or they sit next to you at church, I don't care.
Your uncle's brother.
It doesn't matter. You still need to do the background check on them. They might have the most greatest intentions.
It doesn't matter how they dress, right?
No.
Or the car they drive.
You got to do
a background check.
I know.
In fact, affinity marketing is one of the, every year comes up in the top 10 scams is affinity marketing. What is affinity marketing? people that are marketing through your social networks to get through you.
Yep.
What
Either
is the
Rotary
number one?
Club, church.
Is the number one affinity church. Marketing scam takes place at church.
Yep.
Why? Why is that the number one place?
Because people have they trust one another at church. I
it's
mean, that's
the
why
easiest
think, yeah,
place for scammers to live.
Yeah.
Is church.
They might and for scammers, it might just be people that don't even know better.
Ah, that's fair. They might just be, they might just not understand
how bad they might do a career change midlife and to get sold a certain, when was the last time, haven't you talked to people who went to go work for an insurance company and they tell you a life insurance company and they tell you all the reasons why life insurance is the best investment? Because they don't know the other.
It could be a good investment for the 1% of the population it makes sense for.
Okay. But life insurance by itself is, term life insurance is great.
People are underinsured, but with term life insurance.
All right. Anyway, let's enough harping on that. Let's take a call here. 1-888-2-HANSON if you want to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're talking with Dwight in Montana. Dwight, welcome to Hanson McLean.
How are you guys doing?
Hi, Dwight.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Okay, so I have an annuity plan, and I have about $134,000 in it between my personal and what the contractor or the employer contributes. I'm putting in about another $10,000 a year.
Are you – so can I just better understand this? Are you a union employee?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and so this is the approximately $10,000 gets contributed because of prevailing wage. That's what – so – is that correct?
I'm doing an additional, couple bucks extra an hour.
Okay.
So the contractor's doing about 5,000. I'm doing, the other, 4,500.
Got it. So for the rest of the listeners, Dwight has actually it's an annuity, but it's not the annuity that we rip on all the time. For the rest of the listeners. So we're going to have this discussion about Dwight, his retirement. He doesn't have a choice as to whether he uses this annuity or not. This is actually his union decided this was the investment they were going to use. So anyway, what's your question for us?
I got a couple parts to this. So I've got 12 more years, and then I'll be able to retire and start enjoying the rest of my life. So in the next 12 years,
Dwight, enjoy life today.
Yeah. If we're going to wait to enjoy life in 12 years, you might not.
No. I'm going to be able to enjoy life without having to punch a time clock.
Okay. Perfect.
We feel better about that now. Okay. So your question, 12 years.
So I've got 12 years. So I know at some point I want to pull back my investments so they're a little bit more secure or less volatile, I guess.
How old are you?
So I'll be 48 later this month.
Okay.
And so, I don't know, what the time frame, do I do it a year out, 2 years, 5 years? And then the other question that I have for you guys is we've got so many different investments, so I don't know, which ones, what's the best way to figure out?
So here's what we're going to do. So you're 48 years of age.
I'm 50, right? So I'm about your age.
I'm 54.
I would have 80% of the portfolio in equities.
Yes.
Stocks. Long term. Because over the long period of time, over a 20-year period of time, that brings you to 58. You're not going to spend all these dollars the day you retire, right?
Not exactly.
No, you're going to turn it into some income to help supplement for the remainder of your life. So it needs to last you really to your dying day, maybe you're married and then to a spouse, et cetera. So
and
it's got a long time. Even though you're 48, it's still a long time.
And the best portfolio is the one that you'll actually keep during the downturn. So I think that I agree with Scott. 70 to 80% equities.
Yep.
In terms of...
it's going to take some wild swings.
In terms of the allocation, this is something that's a little different. Because they give you a big menu to choose from, correct? Like they have the S&P 500 and then the spawn fund and this and this.
And the only choice you have is which options within this annuity. You don't have a choice whether it's this group annuity contract or anything else,
and
correct?
It could be written in Chinese because they're all just words, right? And what the average investor does is actually look to see which one has performed the best in the last year, which is a terrible way of actually allocating the portfolio.
That's right.
So
then you're just buying high.
Hey, John, is Chris in the room? I can't see her. We're going to, Dwight, you're going to email those to us, and I'm going to have an advisor actually build a model for you. Can I do that? Am I allowed that? Is compliance?
Yeah.
No, I'm not asking. I'm asking if I'm allowed with our compliance department. I'm going to do it anyway. So you're going to actually email the choices over. We're going to build a model that's probably 75 to 80% equities. And you're just going to stay on the line and give us the information. You're going to email it to us. And then we'll get back to you in a week based upon the choices that they give you with a portfolio. All right?
Oh, that sounds good.
All right. No charge.
No cool. Charge. I definitely appreciate that.
All right, Dwight. So hold on. I'll get you
but I do get to stay at your house when I visit Montana.
Hey, you know what? Come right now and you can experience the full part of Montana.
Come right now. That's right. That's like dead of winter. Come to Montana.
Montana. Yeah. It's not the end of the earth.
Thanks, Dwight.
Appreciate the call.
Appreciate the call. Look at Pat. It's like Christmas continues for the McLean.
I'm not going to do the work. I walked in the break room. They're all standing around. Oh, no.
All standing around.
Not anymore.
See what happens? It'll get to the point when Pat's walking down the hall. If there anyone's having any sort of conversation, they'll just be telling them to get back to the computer. I want to make sure that they're super busy so that...
Everyone scrambles.
Yeah. Because so then Pat doesn't give them more work. Hey, Billy. But actually, we don't have any Billys. Billy!
Get over here.
There's a portfolio for you to analyze.
Dang it. Why aren't you happy here?
You're sitting there talking in the break room. I know. You've been there 16 minutes. And the break's 15.
You know, when I was your age, we didn't even have a break room. I was growing up, when I was new in the business, we used to say, lunch is for wimps. That's what we said.
All right, now let's talk real advice. So today, during for our real advice, this is the time of the show where we talk with one of our own financial advisors, right, Pat?
And they're going to share a little story about an interaction they had with a client and the recommendations they made. And it might ring true with you or give you an idea about your own situation. Remember, this is specific to this client. It may not be reflective of your interaction with the advisor.
That's right. So, every week it's somebody. And this week we've got Steve Burnett, who is a certified financial planner. He's also a chartered certified fund specialist, but he's also president of Hanson McLean. He's been with Hanson McLean for over 20 years. And Steve, thanks for taking time out of your very busy schedule. I know how busy it is because I know a little work Pat and I do. And it falls on Steve. So
I'm working all the time. I do when I'm not working?
You're thinking about work.
So technically, I'm working all the time.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, Steve, thanks for taking some time out today.
Absolutely. Thanks for asking me to help out.
Yeah, so you're not helping out. You are providing information.
Tell us a little bit about the client that you were working with, their situation, and what was unique about it and how you helped resolve the situation.
Sure. This couple had actually been engaged with with Hanson McLean for a number of years by attending some of our workshops. I would say probably about 3 to 4 years before they ever came in. They came in when they were about 5 years away from what they thought was going to be their retirement date. And then we really started doing some planning then to make sure, one, that their goals were realistic, the timeframes were realistic, but two, to go through their overall financial situation to see if there's some things that we can do within that 5 years to make the transition a very, very smooth process for them. So when we looked down, we talked about a few things. They had jumped into the real estate bandwagon a little late. They bought an investment property that they had owned for a couple of years, and it was substantially, they owned it for about 4 years, substantially upside down and continued to pay for it.
How old were they?
At the time when they bought the investment property, they were probably about 52. And so when they came into the office, they were right around 57.
Okay.
And they thought it was, you know, real estate was a done deal. Every time you bought something, it went up 20%, 30%, 50% a year.
Not only that, Steve, but you think about how often people in their 50s, that's often when the people start getting serious about retirement, right? In their 50s, yep. Like, oh, crap, I got to, excuse my language, oh, crap, I got retirement's coming down the road here. I need to start getting. And one of the things that happens sometimes, you see people make
terrible mistakes because they have a tendency to buy an asset that has already moved up.
They
in
think
price.
They need to catch. I better catch up, and they think the way to do that is I need to get higher returns. So they'll look for something that's not always the best investment.
So they bought
chase a return.
And I will say this, though. Outside of this investment decision, both of them have done an outstanding job of savings over the years. So other than this bad investment deal that they thought they should just ride out because eventually investment deals will always turn around, they were so far upside down, they were just throwing good money after bad. But they have accumulated over seven figures in his 401k. He had a near seven-figure lump sum pension.
Wow.
And she was retiring with state of California pension. So their financial position outside of this one investment decision, they were in really good shape.
Okay, so they have this house they're upside down on.
So there was that. They also, in meeting with us and looking at, of course, their investments and their allocations, but we also found out that they were going to need new vehicles as they approached retirement. Both of their vehicles were old, tired, and had a lot of miles on them, so they wanted to get something.
That's why they had the savings balance.
That's why they had high savings balances.
Yep. Right. And they also knew that there were some things that they wanted to do to the house. They knew they were going to need a new roof in the next 3 to 5 years. And they also talked about some remodeling, some updating, some kitchen appliances and some bathrooms. And I can't tell you how many clients, for some reason, when they retire, that's when they decide they want to do major remodeling, rather than trying to identify those things while they're still in the workforce.
So they're 57. Right. They're 57 years old when they come and meet with you. How far off is retirement?
They were on target to retire at within their goals in 5 years of age 62 without question financially. The key was, one, getting them to not fall in love with that investment property. We were still in the tax years. I recall that if you were to short sale a house, because they immediately thought they were going to have to file for bankruptcy to get out from under it.
Oh, my.
The black eye of bankruptcy. And I said, no. We don't need to file bankruptcy. What we probably need to do is take a look at what's the most tax-efficient way to get out from under that property. And at the time, you could short sale a property if you could get somebody to buy it. And the difference between what you owed on the property and the lesser amount that you might have sold it for in a short sale was not going to be deemed a taxable event. So once they were convinced and they saw that over the next several years...
Excuse me, but those rules have subsequently changed.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. They've changed back where if you short sale a house today, you do have a taxable event. If it's
although Trump might make short sales great again, so
he's going to make them great. We're going to win.
Okay. So
So we got through the idea that we're going to get out from under this property and not just throw good money after bad. They've made great investment decisions for the last 25 years, and they got caught up in this one, and we moved on. And then we also mapped out the type of vehicles that they wanted, and you know they both had good incomes, so they were able to pay for them, upgrade their cars, and then also get the vast majority of the remodeling in and done. They did finance a little bit of the remodeling, but it was very easy because outside of that investment property, they had a real good financial structure. In trying to get people, if they need to borrow money to take care of any of this while they're still working, is a lot easier than if they try and borrow money and they're out of the workforce.
Absolutely.
Especially after the 2008-2009 financial collapse, as lenders really tightened up, they look at employment income in a much better light than if you're taking money out of your nest egg for your survival, for your income needs. So we got all of that planning done. And I tell you what it really did is as they transitioned into retirement and as they got closer to that goal date, the worries that they had with this bad investment property over their head and we need to get these new automobiles updated and there's remodeling that we want to do, we were 95% through with it by the time they walked out of their jobs.
It was a multi-year process before they retired.
We met every year, and for the 5 years before they actually left their employment places, and probably talked on the phone once in between those meetings for different things that they would call up on based upon how they were following the plan.
It's for the listeners, I think this is important. So many people show up at our office and say, "I'm retiring in 6 weeks," and we work with those people and we do our best to help those people and. We add great value. Where it works the best is if you meet with us at least 5 years prior to retirement, where you can kind of get all your ducks in a row, just like Steve did with this client, kind of look forward. What expenses should we get off the books before you go to retire? What does the financial portfolio look like? What does the tax situation look like? And
what's
it's
the
so
mortgage
much,
look like? How are we going to best?
So much easier.
I tell people that you should really spend, you know, you spent 25, 30 years to try and get to a point to where you could retire if that's your goal. You should spend a little bit of that time on the actual transition process. Not just, do I have enough money to retire? That's got to be the number one question we get. Or am I allocated correctly in my investments? Those are parts of it. But there's a lot of things that we do as advisors that aren't specific to the investments that help make that transition as smooth as possible. And if you've done a lot of that, and you get within a couple years of retirement, and all of a sudden you get a surprise and you have to retire because of a layoff or because of a medical change for yourself or for a loved one, you are going to be in such better shape. It's not going to be such a shock to you if you've done just some transition planning within that five-year period.
Yep. Perfect. Perfect.
Well, thanks,
Steve. We appreciate the call. And remember, this is reflective of Steve's interaction with a particular client. When the compliance makes us tell everyone, this may not be reflective of your interaction.
Yeah, you might have a horrible interaction and have terrible advice.
Or it could be better.
Probably much better.
Either way.
Anyway, Steve,
thanks,
glad you are take some time.
And Scott, we have our book on the website, The 7 Personal Decision Points.
Yeah, the book is Personal Decision Points, 7 Steps to Your Ideal Retirement.
And it tracks this process that we use to get people ready for retirement. The 7 steps, easy read, easy to understand, help you to better understand your own situation.
And 75% off the list price if you go to moneymatters.com/book. moneymatters.com/book, and it'll give you some code at Amazon, where it's 75% off the typical price.
Easy read. It's worth taking the time to prepare for your retirement.
Yeah. And how many situations have you seen like Steve's over the years? People come in and plenty of time.
Earlier the better.
Yeah.
The earlier the better. So, the more value we can add.
Anyway, we are running out of time, as you can tell by the music. We are here every weekend at this very same time. And if you'd like to learn more about us, moneymatters.com. Again, moneymatters.com. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.